It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And so we're stuck here again.
Yep, we are. Why does this keep happening?
Nobody knows the trouble we've seen. Nobody knows this podcast.
That's about right.
Every time that song comes up in my life, which it comes up more than zero, so I feel like that's already kind of impressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I immediately think of?
No.
John Denver on The Muppet Show, surrounded by a bunch of mushroom Muppets for some reason in his dressing room, singing, "Nobody knows the truffles I've seen."
Hmm. I remember that episode, but I don't remember that bit.
That's the only bit I remember from that episode. That's one of the weird Muppet Show things stick out for me, and almost all of them are dressing room bits. I remember the thing where all the Muppets are in Elton John's dressing room singing this crazy song, and Kermit's really mad and he gets them shut up, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, all that racket." And he's like, "I don't mind." He's like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, because I wrote it." And Kermit's like, "What?" And he's like, "Well, it's supposed to sound like this." And then he does Benny and the Jets.
Oh. I see.
Stuff like that. I remember a lot of those.
I don't remember that at all.
And a lot of the Muppet Show and Sesame Street did this. I'm just at this moment realizing this. If the guest star was a woman, frequently they would be on set against a wall in which one other Muppet was there talking with them. I can picture so many guest stars that did that. None of them are men.
Would it usually also be followed by like a musical number with
them? Yeah. And frequently a flirting or romantic thing with the Muppet.
Sure.
The one that really always sticks is Rita Moreno's "It's Not Easy Being Green," which, holy shit, I don't even like that song, but that was a great version. She did a great job with that song.
Well, one of the versions of what you're talking about was actually, I think, Piggy and Raquel Welch.
So
there was a little conflict between them, of course, but then they sang "I'm a Woman," you know, they sang that song together, sort of, yeah. But I mean, Raquel Welch wasn't known as a singer or even a dancer, was she? She was an actor, right?
I think she could dance. I don't remember, though.
But that's, for sure. But she did a number. And it was preceded, like you said, with the woman and a Muppet sort of
and
talking
never
to each other.
I mean, I understand that setup because the dude can hide behind it and stick his hand up the Muppet. But I'm like, I can't ever remember that with a guy. And the sad thing is, maybe it was with a guy, and I just don't remember it, and it's a weird.
I think Paul Simon did something like that, but then a whole bunch of other Muppets came in.
Yeah.
I think it right before he sang.
Yes? Evil Ezzy, did you want something?
I don't remember what it was now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Evil Hat Podcast. The only podcast that makes me record it. I'm Tony. Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
And this is Evil episode number, we don't know.
Don't know.
And this is Evil Ezzy. I have no idea what that is. What the fuck is that?
I'll look.
Something's like, there's like a vibrator, not a vibrator, a vibrating alarm is going off, basically. Stop. What was that?
I don't know.
Very weird. Apparently it's time to wake up.
You can sit there too if you want, but I'm sitting down.
Okay. Yep.
She's not gonna. Evil Ezzy doesn't
want to
sit with you.
Evil Ezzy does not want you to sit on her. For those of you just joining us, this is a weird time to do it. We don't normally do this show. There's a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And folks, good folks.
Not evil folks.
No. So I mean that as an insult. Good folks. Write into that email address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Little notes, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, magically delicious, on its own, transmogrifies the emails in the little note cards, manifests physically within the hat itself. It's like note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. The vibro alarm is going off again. It's probably the producer's phone, and it's a phone call.
Why is your phone back here?
That's a long story. But mostly that she's constantly losing her phone. Usually some other guys, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, talk about them on the air, like read them and stuff, talk about them till they're bored and do that for about an hour. And then when they can't do that, they make us do that. So here we are at Evil Peter's Donuts. Evil 3 in the morning. Or 3 in the evil morning is probably,
I guess,
better. 3 A evil M. So yeah. So how you doing?
I'm alright.
I don't care.
I knew that.
Yeah. How am I doing?
I don't care.
I'm alright. That's a word puzzle for you folks at home. See if you can put that conversation together. We had a little time travel in there or something. Is there a purse over there?
I mean, I don't really see anything.
Do you see a bag?
I don't know if that's a bag.
Pick it up. See what it is.
Dark bag. Pick it up from what?
From where it is.
Well, but it's like buried and stuff.
Oh, then it's probably not good.
Is there still something holding you here?
I don't know. The real answer is I should get up and check it out, but
I mean, it's kind of, there's too much stuff around. I'm afraid to pull too hard, I might break something.
Can you identify where the buzzing is coming from?
I think there is a bag here.
Okay, get the bag. I absolve you of
I have to
property liability. Don't unplug anything or you'll kill our podcast.
Well, that's part of what I'm worried about.
Yeah, don't do that.
Okay.
This is good radio.
Well, maybe it's this.
Is this? It shouldn't be that.
That's not the bag I was thinking of, but I know.
Yeah, it shouldn't be this bag.
Okay. The other bag is kind of large. And
it's got white piping on it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the bag I want.
Oh. Oh, no, I'm going to pull something.
That's the bag.
I'm going to pull some loose.
Don't do it.
I don't want to do it. Okay, there we go.
Phew. Yeah, this is my wife's current purse, which means it's probably her phone, which means it probably doesn't matter. She gets a lot of phone calls that have nothing to do with her. Somebody out there gives out her number, and they clearly think it's theirs, and they are wrong.
Oh.
And this person has a lot of people try and call them.
Most of the people who call our cell phone and our landline, both, are solicitors. We almost never get phone calls from anybody else, like our family or anything else.
Yeah.
It's mostly people wanting money. That's money we owe, but money for donations.
I would say that
stuff.
Is the truth for her, too. The problem is, some employees have her number, and there could be, and I don't know what she does for a living, so there could be emergencies, so I just want to check, but I'm like, nah, I'm pretty sure not. Excuse me.
Well, whoever it is, they're persistent.
All right, so, yeah, we got nothing interesting to talk about. Let's pull out the hat.
Pull stuff out of the hat.
Let's head
this,
it
get
up.
This whole thing over with.
Yes. This thing called life.
This is from Craig.
Craig.
Have you ever witnessed a solar eclipse?
No, so I'm not going to corroborate one if you claim there was one.
I have witnessed one, yes, but not. I don't think I've had that experience that a lot of people recently did with...
Don't say recently, I don't know what time it is.
Well, over here we get...
At some point.
Eclipses like twice a year.
Well done.
Right across the...
Good
don't you
save.
Don't you pay attention?
No.
But I've never been out when, you know, the... all of the moons are aligned and you get this brilliant sort of coronal thing going from... Well, and one of the suns has to be set. But you get this brilliant coronal thing going with the one that's left and it gets eerie outside. Never seen that. I just hear people talk about it.
Yeah. Right before going back to work in the acid mines.
I don't work in the acid mines.
No.
I have friends who do.
You have friends?
Well, they work in the acid mines, so what do you think?
With but, friends like those, who needs acid miners?
It's friends is a relative term.
No one told you life was gonna be this way. You're working in the acid mines. Your love life's DOA. And I mean that literally. You were dating someone and they died in the acid mines. It doesn't make the song any worse, let's be honest.
It really doesn't.
It's not a good song.
You're right.
When I was in college, there was a comedian who came, and he did a lot of stuff with a guitar. And he was talking about how the people who write theme songs for TV shows and stuff, maybe he was just talking about music nowadays in general, they do not care about the lyrics. And he pulled that song up as an example, because he's like, we all know the first bit. No one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's a joke. You're broke. Your love life's DOA. It's like you're always stuck in second gear, and it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year. And that's what they use in the show, and that's great. There's more to that song.
Mm-hmm.
The next verse says, alarm went off at 10. Your workday starts at 8. You burned your toast again. So far today is just going great, which he's like, what the fuck? But then the last line is, your mother told you there'd be days like this. He's like, what's the first line of the song? No one told you life was gonna be this way. So yeah, not a great song. Also, doesn't really cheer you up if you're in the acid mines.
No.
Or so I am told.
Well, I have it on pretty good authority that, nothing can cheer you up in the acid mines. Well,
except the bass.
Except the sweet release of death.
The sweet release of death.
But nobody knows that for sure.
Yeah.
They suspect that's true.
The acid mines are haunted by these ghosts that are like, nope, it's just as shitty on this side.
Happy ghosts.
Just...
No, they're happy. All
just
the ghosts,
as shitty.
All
well,
the ghosts
then,
of the acid mine are happy.
The sweet release of death is
it is
good.
A relief,
right,
yeah.
So. No, I like the idea that they're like, pump the brakes a little bit. This is not a step up. At best, this is a lateral move. So you can just chill on the praying for death.
Because, for one thing, you're stuck here now.
Yeah.
They're dying here.
Yeah.
But they're evil, so maybe they like watching other people suffer while they feel nothing. I don't know.
We're all pretty evil, so...
It's hard to say. Is that, are we done with Craig?
Well, I didn't ever say if I saw...
Yes, you did. You said you never had.
Yeah, no, I meant, like, in a legal sense.
Like you had inside the document?
Exactly. The witness,
saying that you've witnessed,
witnessed
it?
I have not, yeah, I have not...
I've never notarized an eclipse, but...
Donk. Notary is a really underappreciated profession, I think.
I guess.
Like, I only know about notaries, at least originally, because it was always a joke in, like, TV shows and stuff. that somebody was a notary and like how goofy that was. But I'm like, no, that's important. It's like an official witness.
That's right.
We need more of those. A lot more of those. Yeah, I haven't really witnessed a solar eclipse. I caught one a little bit from an angle wearing weird glasses inside. Yeah, but that was it. So,
isn't their full name or full title Notary Public?
Yes, Notary Public. I suppose a private notary would not be as useful.
I don't know.
Like, just amongst your friends, you could be the one that's like, no, they definitely said that, or they definitely agreed to that.
Well, but I mean, you put an embossed seal on things.
Yeah.
So.
You're like human escrow.
Huh. I could buy a little embosser stamp and just go around telling people, hey, you can tell people that I was there, I'll stamp it, and maybe that'll mean something to them.
Spray paint.
Look, I have proof. William was there.
That's my.
Who's William? He's just a guy I know, but he was there. You can go ask him.
Like, were you there? Like, yeah. Like, what happened? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
I don't remember.
I was there, though.
I must have been
clearly,
there.
Clearly.
There's my.
That's my sigil. Clearly, I or one of my most trusted retainers was present at the time.
Oh, man. That would be funny.
No, I don't want to be a notary. But it probably takes effort.
I'd go home for a birthday or a holiday or something. Does anyone want me to stamp something so with proof that you were here with me?
No, we're all trying to forget it.
We don't want to admit you were here.
I wouldn't go around and stamp things to verify that William wasn't there. I'll show up and look around and be like, William? All right, good. Ka-chunk. We're fine.
Notary William.
It's like, were you there? I can't prove that. But I can tell you William was not.
William was definitely not there.
There's no way I can know if I was there.
This was a certified William-free zone.
Yes. You know, Delaware.
I can go to Delaware.
No,
I can't go to Delaware.
No.
We already established that, didn't we?
Did we?
I think we did.
So many reasons why you can't go to Delaware.
Wait.
For starters, he doesn't believe it exists.
Was it Delaware?
There's a lot of states you're not allowed in. Delaware, Montana.
I'm talking about...
Gas. You're not allowed to be in that physical state.
Yeah, but...
All right, only liquid and solid for
I'm
you.
I'm not going to talk about that because I don't want to get in trouble.
Mm.
But...
Acid. Wow. I feel like Evil Tony and Evil William have really run out of fucks to give. I feel like this is our breaking episode. We're like, you know what? Screw that hat. We're just going to sit around, pretend y'all aren't even here.
We don't do that anyway?
I feel like we keep some semblance of doing it.
I think the other guys...
It's my turn to draw. You do the first one.
That's what I'm trying to get you to do.
Yeah, how polite of you.
Because I'm done talking about Craig's eclipse.
Total eclipse of the Craig.
I don't mean a car that he drives. I mean this question.
Partial eclipse of the Craig was after he got in an accident.
Not a total eclipse.
That came later in a worse accident. And then it was a total eclipse of Craig.
Yep. Totaled eclipse.
Yeah. We are so witty tonight. Well, this is going to blow that out of the water fucking here.
Is it Craig again?
No, it's Jazz.
Oh, Jazz. Okay.
What mythic narratives do you think are most beneficial and which most harmful to today's society?
That wasn't a very good impersonation of Jazz.
That's exactly what I hear every time I read anything from her. It's like sort of like a asthmatic Julia Child without the accent, I guess, is sort of what I'm going for. That's how I imagined her.
Mythic, wow. I don't know. I mean, of course, I've heard some people argue that most things that people would understand as mythic, most of those things are no good for society at all.
Yeah.
They have little use or no use whatsoever.
Well, the easy one that I, in the bad category for me, is just all, well, I think it's been touched on before, all the honor-bound stuff. And specifically, it tends to relate to revenge and vengeance.
Yeah, right.
There are so many, and you know, all the, every time I hear someone in a movie or something talk about eye for an eye, I'm like, that's a shitty doctrine. That's a terrible doctrine. Why is it better that we're all blind now? Like, why would that be good? And yeah, mythos is a lot of mythic narratives have to do with, you know, being honor bound to do something you wouldn't otherwise do, or having, you can't rest until you had vengeance, or, you know, your ancestors can't rest. And I'm like, oh my God.
Although, to be fair, some mythic stories are trying to show you how stupid that is, you know, or how destructive that is, or how ill-advised that is. Some are.
Some are definitely that way. I think in some cases that's a more modern interpretation of them. But I mean, there are some, especially if you get more into sort of fable category. I think you get that kind of
stuff. I'm thinking there are some biblical narratives. I mean, stories in the Bible that they're cautionary tales about that kind of thing.
Well, and cheek turning and shit like that. I'm big into cheek turning.
Mythic stories about, like, amorous relationships, and it's clearly not healthy.
Oh my God.
Those are terrible.
Every old story is like, so there was this great, usually married dude, and then he saw this woman, and he gave her a boner so much that he, like, murdered his wife, or fled his kingdom, or did something terrible because she gave him such a good boner. That when she met him, like, 2 days ago.
Basically, yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Those are pretty bad.
And that's the thing. Like, you take classic plays drive me insane. Because I'm like, oh, these are all idiots. Because it's always the falling in love. Just in, like, falling in love in any mythic tale is the worst.
Is mostly lust, and it's obsession, and...
And infatuation, and it's never... It's always quick. It's always instant.
Yeah, and it's not love, really. Not in any sense that I understand the term.
And it always results in, again, kill your spouse, burn down your people, join a cult, like, all the things.
But also, there are some of those stories that, you know, it's supposed to be seen as bad. Like, but, for example, I don't know... An example of the kind of thing you're talking about. I've never really understood Romeo and Juliet. I understand it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many people come away from that thinking it's so romantic, you know, no, like in a positive way. And I'm
absolutely
thinking, this is not...
Absolutely.
This seems to me more a cautionary tale than something you're supposed to...
Yes, and you are not alone in this. This goes back... As far as, like, fifth season Simpsons, there's a joke in which Milhouse says, "We were like Romeo and Juliet, but it ended in tragedy."
Instead of the way
and
it
people
ruined.
Are constantly like, it's like Romeo and Juliet are on social media, and someone's like, "So you mean like 13-year-olds who got married after 3 days, had sex once, and then through some misunderstandings, both killed themselves a week later?" Like, why is no?
Because I remember hearing, you know, Romeo and Juliet referred to before I'd ever read it or knew anything about it, and I thought, oh well, these are. Famous lovers in literature, or whatever.
It is held up as the classic romance.
And then then I heard the story or read it or whatever, and I thought, oh well, this isn't what I thought based on what everybody has said about it. This is terrible.
And the
this is awful.
The entire romantic comedy genre of film is this idea. And what it is pay attention to what they say, not what they do. And the reason Romeo and Juliet is considered so romantic is because they have these amazingly florid and devoted protestations of love. These incredible speeches that sound kind of crazy, but I mean are all super, and it's the same thing in romantic comedies. They say these things like, oh, I learned to be a better person because you know, and it sounds wonderful unless you stop and look, and they like, let's just talk about all the things they did in this movie.
Yeah, they're being
and
you're stalkers. Like,
that is
they're
fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Romeo and Juliet. Like, oh, my love is like, okay, but let's just go through the actions. Let's not talk about any of the words that were said. This is terrible. Well, but compound that with, let's go through the actions, not any of the words that were said. Wow, this is remarkably typical for 13-year-olds. Like, a lack of proper parenting is the only reason they managed to get as far as they did in this process. Like, I remember being 13 and having feelings like that, but I also had parents that stopped me from... And I also didn't have a goddamn friar who would marry 13-year-olds. Like, so much of this is on him. And that's what I love, is there's so much... The moral lesson in Romeo and Juliet appears to be anti-family feuding.
Yeah, it's the families that are at fault.
See, this wouldn't have been a problem because they could have been out in the open about it and then they wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
And that works insofar as you say, and then 6 months later they would have been sick of each other and everybody would have gone back to normal. But beyond that, I'm like, no. The problem is the goddamn 13-year-olds, and more specifically, the fucker who married them. Knowing they'd known each other for 3 days. Knowing that just as freaky an obsession with Juliet was had by the same gentleman hours before about Rosaline.
Well, my opinion...
Also, don't ever fall in love when you're still wearing masks. There's something wrong. If you have to be wearing masks to fall in love, something's wrong.
My opinion is that there's a certain kind of romance narrative that's toxic, and it doesn't matter if it's a myth or if it's told today or any time. Toxic romance narratives, just like toxic masculinity narratives, are terrible. And they're especially terrible. They're terrible all the time, but they're particularly terrible right now. And so I generally don't like them. But
by the way, toxic masculinity narrative is the name of my Pussy Riot cover band.
Oh, and I wasn't talking about the Acid Mines. I was talking about...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and minds don't discriminate by sex or gender. They're toxic to everyone.
Yeah, they're toxic to everybody. But as far as myths that would be good or helpful, I mean, I think any story, again, myth or any other kind, that shows characters struggling, perhaps, to reach a point of understanding or forgiveness, I think those are very powerful.
There are quite a lot of stories, narratives praising steadfastness that I don't think are toxic. There are plenty of examples
where
somebody stayed devoted to someone and that was good. And, you know, you support the people you love, you support the people you think are right. Like, that's a thing. Some people would argue some of the ones about familial consistency are good. I am one of those who is like, your family is only people that you've known longer than most people. But for some people, family is a very important thing. Whether you like them or not, you have to stand by them kind of thing. And so that could be seen as positive for them.
Well, one thing that's problematic about answering questions like this is that there's no narrative that's ever existed that can't be co-opted by bad people and turned into their propaganda with very little tweaking. It just has to come from them, and suddenly it's like, wow, this, when my grandmother told me this story, it was heroic and uplifting, and now when this person tells me the story almost verbatim because of how it's packaged and who it's coming from, it sounds terrible, horrific.
Now, the question is the converse true? Is their narrative so bad that somebody can't find a way to de-pervert it, to uplift it into a positive narrative?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean. I mean, certainly there have been people who have tried to take...
I mean, the exact opposite of what you just meant.
No, I know, but, like, would it serve as an example, a Grimm's fairy tale, for example, that's deeply sexist, but someone retold it in a way where it wasn't?
Yeah.
I mean...
No, and I think there are examples of that, but is there something that's... Let's get our positive spin on the Holocaust. How do we do that? Oh, where? Hitler gave birth to 6 million babies.
What?
A large number of whom were Jewish. I'm trying to put a positive spin on the narrative of the Holocaust. Like, retell it in a way that's uplifting. So...
Well, I mean...
Hitler was so depressed that he couldn't be an artist that he made a wish and he gained the ability to give birth.
Does the film Schindler's List tell a Holocaust story in a way that's uplifting?
No, it's not to me.
Okay, I'm asking, I don't know.
I think I'm already in trouble here putting the Holocaust as a mythic narrative. I feel like that's skirting some dangerous territory.
Oh, I didn't know we were... I thought you
it's
were
still
just,
mythic, so...
Okay, I thought you were just talking about
the
narrative.
The card said, I mean, what can we do against the card? I don't remember.
Well, there's...
It's probably really...
There are so many stories that glorify, you know, violence as a solution, especially for men.
That was another one.
You don't want those.
Another damaging stereotype or narrative. Just about anything involving judgment.
You mean like a... Like chastising a person or casting them out?
No, I mean, officially, yeah. And this guy didn't do what he's supposed to do or didn't, you know, worship the right person or whatever or didn't follow the rules and so suffered by drowning in a lake of fire, let's say, hypothetically.
Oh, I see.
That kind of shit. Actually... This is. I'm gonna have to choose my words very carefully here. In fact, I'm just gonna profess this up front as my disclaimer. Evolution's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Just want to say that. However, I think a very damaging, relatively recent myth, but still I would call it a mythic narrative, that is incredibly damaging, is commonly referred to as social Darwinism.
Yes.
Like, what? It's weird how long it took me to really put together. Like, I've seen a lot of negative examples, but I was in my head. It's always like, yeah, because they misconstrued things or whatever. And I'm like, no, the entire premise is super bullshit. Right off the bat.
Yep.
Like, on so many levels, like it's. I think what it comes down to is the concept of social Darwinism is metaphoric, and everybody who believes in it considers it literal. It's because you're saying survival of the fittest, natural selection. What that means is there is a tendency for those who find their ecological niche to be more able to pass on their genes via reproduction. So put that in your social Darwin metaphor. Where does that happen? No, you're just saying the people who can win should win.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same thing, and that's not at all what that means.
No, that's right.
And it has to do with a lot of people not understanding evolution.
That's right.
My mother, classically, years and years ago, got into a debate with her family. I don't even remember what it was, but at a certain point it came up in it that her brother, who at this point was like a 50-some-year-old man, so not a kid, was like, but we won. And she's like, what? She's like, we are the dominant species on the planet. We won. And I'm like, no, that's not what that means.
No, it's not what it means.
At all.
There are so many people who don't even understand the basic concept of when we say survival of the fittest, we don't mean an individual. We mean a population.
No.
And we mean a diverse population. So it can't be one species of population of species. It's got to be all the species that are symbiotic with them.
And it is survival. In no way is it necessarily at the expense of others.
Right.
It is, you found an ecological niche. And, like, humans didn't win. You know who some of the best ones that came out from natural selection or whatever? Insects.
Mm-hmm.
Insects have figured out some cool shit, and we don't give a fuck about insects. We step on them all the time. I do it myself. They creep me out. They win at evolution because they are reproducing the fuck out of themselves. So, and I'm not saying we should be like insects. No, I'm saying that's what that means.
Yeah, that's what it means. Very much so.
And that is still a common, like to be fair, most fictitious narratives that explicate that, that's the wrong thing. That's what the villain is thinking. But I think there's this idea that it's the villain is misusing the concept and not the entire concept is absolute shit.
I think you're absolutely right. I think what people think is that the villain is right, but a good person doesn't exploit it to his own end.
Or doesn't do it in that way or whatever.
Right.
'Cause people still toss it out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's always as a joke, but people are like, oh, it's survival of it. I'm like, no. It's not. Well, roses are red, violets are blue, then. Well, to you, I don't.
What are some examples of helpful myths or narratives that.
See, that's a problem. God, shit.
I mean, I'm a big believer in stories that teach lessons of various kinds without being preachy.
A lot, maybe. A good 60-70% of the story of Jesus is pretty positive narratives.
Sure. I totally agree with that, obviously. A lot of stuff from the Sermon on the Mount and, you know, the teaching people to help other people. And
I mean, there are... The hero's journey in and of itself... is not necessarily a negative
narrative. No, I don't narrative. Think so. It can be, but also can be...
Well, and I have some other things. Like, I would love it if different. We didn't call it that.
Well,
there's too much attached to the concept of hero at this point.
You think so?
I do. I think that narrative can just be used as self-improvement, self-enlightenment, self-awareness, personal growth. That's not the hero has a lot of connotations about being like special above others, saving other people. Like there's an us and them thing when you have a hero. There's the hero, and then there's everybody who's not the hero. And I think that's I think that narrative should not impinge. I prefer that narrative to not impinge on anybody else following a similar narrative. So, you're special, like everyone is special. And you can have a story that's about how you're special and what that means. But there's two options, like, yeah, no, all these people can't do shit, but now you come along and can save us all. You're the chosen one.
Yeah.
Tired of chosen ones.
Yeah, I don't like that either. But see, to me, those are just not very good hero stories.
Yeah. And in general, well, this will come out in a lot of my writing. I am very fascinated by the idea, but very opposed to fate and destiny and things like that.
Sure, yep.
I think it can be a fun narrative to play with, but at this point, I'm only gonna invert it or lampshade it. Like, I love the mythological concept of agents on behalf of fate or destiny. This idea that, like, shit has to go this way, but we have to employ imperfect instruments to execute it.
Yeah.
I was going to invent a whole role-playing game about the idea of some people that accidentally steal the Book of Fate, and after thousands of years, it's opened again, and now they basically have to enact what it says. So it says, like, this person's going to die. They have to go kill that person. I love that idea. But the only way I would put that in a narrative is to subvert it.
Mm.
Is to and that still comes up a lot. That is not uncommon to hear, you know... There's fairy tales now. We got it's your destiny to do this, but then the person decides they don't like that destiny and they want to do their own thing.
Right.
Far too often that gets undercut, where it's like, well, actually, there's this extra prophecy, or actually, if you look at it this way, so you still fulfilled your destiny. I'm like, no, how about there wasn't any?
Yeah.
Or it was wrong. So, yeah, I'm more in favor of that. These are just possible futures.
I think nowadays, stories that show how two people who you, at the beginning of the story, you really can't understand how they could possibly ever get along, but they find some way in the end to do so, because I think that's a problem people are having right now. A lot of people cannot imagine having a conversation with a person who's has a particular opinion or comes from a particular place. And
so the odd couple narrative, we're saying.
I don't know.
The buddy cop comedy narrative.
No, but something
more. Yeah, you get two people together and we don't agree. We don't even want to hang out together. But in the end you find out, you know what? They're human too, and I love them for their things.
I guess. But more, I'm trying to think of something that's more apt still than that. Because those narratives, you know what's going to happen at the end. You know they're going to get along at the end. Because even though they can't see how they're the same or how they might complement one another, you and the audience can. I'm talking about a narrative where you're pretty sure that these people are going to kill each other or they're going to just go their separate ways. There's not any ways you and the audience can reconcile these two people or even that you want to, but then something happens that reconciles them anyway.
Give me an example.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm having a hard time thinking of such a story.
I just realized political pundits, Jim, what's his name, who looks like a snake and is married to Maureen somebody, and that's a famous thing because they're a married couple and he's a Democrat and she's a Republican.
He helped with Clinton's campaign.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
What the hell do you think they're doing these days?
I don't know.
Like
Carvel. What was his name?
Carvel. Jim Carvel. Carvel. But I don't know. Maybe he's the Fudgy the Whale guy. I keep wanting to say she's Maureen McCormick, but I think that's an actress. I think that's who played Marsha Brady. So that's probably not. But I feel like her name's Maureen. Or maybe Mary.
I know who you're talking about. Yes. I don't remember.
Well, what must their life... Like, the only way I picture it is either they just are both so fucking detached that somehow none of this is registering for them, which I find hard to believe. Or she's like, yeah, I'm out. Like, I'm a Republican, but the shit that's going on now, I am out. Or they've just murdered each other. Those are like the only three possible things I can see.
Okay, here's an example, but I'm going to admit right now it's not a very well-executed one, but it's kind of an example of what I'm talking about. Star Wars, where Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker eventually reconciled, right? I mean...
Yeah. And here we go. The redemption arc is a very positive narrative.
If it's done right.
It's frequently has the shit abused out.
Well, like, for Star Wars, is a good example. This guy stood by while a whole planet was destroyed. It's really hard
to
understand that reconciliation aspect. But if you do it right... I think, yeah, it can be very powerful, and it can help people maybe examine their own...
And Star Wars did good with it in that the important thing is a redemption arc does not erase the past.
That's true.
It's not a scales issue.
Yeah, right.
It's not like if you do enough good shit, then we forgive you for the other shit. And frequently the way people get around that is... the bad person dies doing something good.
Like Darth Vader did.
Like Star Wars.
Right.
I want to see that tackled, though. Because usually those are the two versions of the narrative. Is I'm bad. Suddenly I'm good. I sacrifice myself. It's over.
Yeah.
Or I'm bad. I see the light. Now I'm just one of the good guys.
Yeah. So
those are the two versions.
Nothing that happened ever matters again.
What? What? Good job. We're in a mystery episode, so shh. But good job.
here's a narrative that has always bothered me ever since I was young, where the only way people learn their lesson, whatever that lesson is if somebody dies.
Yep.
I hate that.
Yep.
I hate someone's got to die. Someone's got to shed blood. It's one of the things that has always bothered me about actually a lot of Orthodox Christianity. It's like, well, someone's got to die. Jesus had to die. Does it really, is that what it's about? And in fact, when I read the Bible, the way it looks to me is that that's not the way God wanted it at all. That's something that we humans demanded, blood, before we would accept any kind of change or any kind of forgiveness even.
Well,
and I think that's the lesson of...
Even if you take the hardline version on that, God, Jesus was the sacrifice.
So there shouldn't have to be any.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right. That's exactly
Jesus.
That.
It's interesting. When I finally sort of had it explained to me by a fundamentalist person, like how that worked, it sounded like a kind of cool sci-fi story to me. Because the whole idea, like in the Old Testament, you had sacrifices of animals and stuff like that. And then you had Jesus, and he was the last one. And we don't do that anymore because Jesus created a pathway to this other way where you just are sad and you get forgiven.
Right. You're just sad. But that's the idea.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, and so this idea that, like, others and that...
But you still get these stories where someone has to die, and it's like, man, I hate that. Because I think that's what people think. You know, they're not gonna let go until someone gets hurt or dies.
I appreciate narratives of selflessness, but the narratives of I am tired of the greater good narratives. I'm not even saying it's a bad narrative, because that is a complicated, interesting issue. Trolley problems.
Sure.
It's been done to death, and I'm tired of it. Nobody is coming up with a new spin on it. Let's stop. Because you know what? Sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to do one or the other, regardless of whether it's appropriate. Like, the real issue is when it comes to that kind of shit, it's complicated.
Well, and also...
And no narrative ever wants it to be complicated.
No. In fact, a lot of times people use the trolley stuff. What they're trying to say is, you got to be a utilitarian because that's the only thing that makes sense. No, it's not. There's
we were just
lots
talking
of different
the
other
day with the driverless car thing, which, by the way, my theory on that now is that driverless vehicles will become a huge thing in terms of freight and delivery, but that passenger driverless vehicles will never catch on. That is my belief.
Okay. That's interesting.
Just because this gets too complicated.
Yeah.
And the trolley problem with the cars, if you interview people and you say, which thing should the car have, they'll say, of course, the one that saves the most lives. But if you say to them, there's two different cars, you can buy either one, which one do you want? They want the one that's going to save them.
Sure.
And, as the producer has pointed out, what if that becomes a marketing edge? What if you're like, you know, for $500 more, you get the AI that'll save you above everybody else.
So the people who have the cars that'll save them are disproportionately the wealthy people.
Exactly. Which, to be fair, already exists.
That's true.
With a lot of safety features. But that becomes really weird then. And I think because of and the fact that we're already looking at cars being able to be hacked now and we're not doing shit about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that happening. But yeah, I'm tired of that argument unless you have a new spin on it. And I think I referenced a while back the 100, where they talked about that somebody's like, I'm trying to keep humanity alive. And the other person's like, I'm trying to make sure humanity's still worthy of being alive.
Being alive, yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, that is, it's sad that it was from a CW sci-fi show. But that, not that I didn't already have that view, but like, I'm like, that's the articulation I haven't been able to find before, is that I don't give a fuck about humanity's survival if we're shitty enough.
That's right. Yep.
And
to me, that's kind of the essence of humanity. It's not just about surviving. Humans have classically...
Mr. Belvedere told us this decades ago. According to our new arrival, life is more than mere survival.
Well, that's... Like, humans...
I just might live a good life, yes.
Humans could easily have destroyed themselves long ago trying to fight for the right to be stupid and whatever else. I mean, humans aren't really concerned just with surviving. They want to thrive. And if they're not thriving, they'll fight to the death someone who's not letting them do that, and which means that most humans would totally give up the whole aspect of survival if they can't thrive at the same time. That's the way humans are. It's the way we've always been, and I hope we always are that way, but I don't know. It seems like people are getting... They're lowering their standards for what it means to be human.
And there is a complication in this. If we really adhere to that concept, nobody's going to be working the acid mines. It's the bit from Office Space. If you had $1 million and you didn't have to work, what would you do? And you're supposed to find out what you should do. And they're like, it's flawed. So if we did that, nobody would be working the acid mines. Or unclogging toilets and all the other stuff they said in the movie. But I feel like the acid mine part also is a thing. Where do good people get their acid from?
Oh, how should I know? You mean over there?
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that the good universe has acid mines.
I have...
Like, even people in the evil universe, some of them are on the fence about the acid mines.
Well,
it's pretty evil.
I think what I understand about the other side is there are a lot of people over there that are as evil or even more evil than we are, but there's a lot of denial about it. A lot of denial. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, the only denial we have here is that river in Egypt.
Yep.
And it's wearing a goatee. Not going to tell you where. Just let your imagination run wild with that one.
Sometimes the floods make it disappear for a while, but it comes back.
Yeah. Like Henry Cavill's mustache. Speaking of evil. Seriously, did you hear the whole story behind that?
Yeah, I did.
Like, the pettiness going on? That was amazing.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Henry Cavill has to have a mustache for the Paramount film for Mission Impossible 6. And they have to do reshoots for Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And Paramount's like, fuck you. He's keeping it.
He's contractually obligated to keep it.
We are not letting him have a fake. Or other people were like, it is way easier to add in hair in post than
like digital,
to take out
digitally,
hair.
Digitally, yeah.
And Warner Brothers is like, you know what?
We'll totally pay for that shit. We'll pay for
and
it all.
And they were like, nah. Which, you know, on a certain level, there are times when you want to put your foot down. But that one, just the whole amazing...
Yeah, incredibly petty.
And
like
millions of dollars over that. Like, so much money that could be used.
Do you think that was
the acid mines?
Do you think that was just? Do you think that was done with like bad faith, or that was just some bureaucrat basically saying, "Nope, don't do it."
I think it was dick measuring. I think it was 100% dick measuring.
So they wanted to see if Warner Brothers would like make it work, or and if they didn't, would suffer for it. Like
they just didn't. They're like, not my problem. Like, well, what if we did that? No, we don't want to do anything.
Do you think it was revenge for something Warner Brothers did to them first?
Possibly. I mean, I'm pretty sure in the cutthroat world of mainstream filmmaking, it's like the goddamn Northern Ireland there. I'm sure.
Probably.
Like, well, 20 years ago.
You took this actor from us, so.
We were going to cast Stephen Merchant as Wolverine, and you forced us to take Hugh Jackman instead. We've never forgiven you for that.
But it's Paramount, though, right? So, wasn't...
I don't know. I'm just caught up in Stephen Merchant as Wolverine now. I love that.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, I couldn't believe all the stuff they were saying. I thought, really? Why would they do that?
Why do I like Stephen Merchant so much and hate Ricky Gervais so much? Because they were a team.
Yeah, pretty much.
But he's such an asshole, and he's kind of nice. Like
Merchant is, you mean?
Yeah, I like him, and I think he's a good actor.
He is a good actor.
But fuck Ricky Gervais. I mean, Ricky Gervais makes me laugh sometimes, but in general, if he didn't exist, I'd be fine with it.
Well, he's in the acid mines now, so.
Evil Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. Oh, you were talking about.
No, I'm just trying to picture what the evil version of Ricky Gervais is. I think he just says the same shit he says good Ricky Gervais says, but it's like he's not even trying to be funny. Like, there's no attempt at humor.
No irony.
It's just
there.
The same awkward shit. and insulting and poor taste, but it's just like him talking. Like, it's not, he's not trying to be funny.
So, a lot like his actual character in The Office.
Yeah.
Although, sometimes he is trying to be funny. I guess, now that I think about it.
I haven't watched The British Office in a long time. That is hard to watch.
It is, kind of.
Because it's so... I have a definitive line on cringy comedy, and that is hard up against that line. And here's the thing with cringy comedy. Like, it's no fault of theirs. That thing is fucking brilliant. It doesn't mean I can watch it. Like, it is just, like, the pathos and hatred simultaneously. It's like, you're the worst person, die in a fire. Also, your life is so sad, nobody should have to suffer like that. Like, as the two competing thoughts in your head at once thing. It's like...
Yeah. That's true.
Rough. And again, I think there's a little too much of I see younger me in him. The whole wanting to be accepted and trying to be funny.
Trying
and pushing back hard when it doesn't work. Yeah. Digging yourself deeper. Like, if I could just push through this, I just need one line that they're going to laugh at, and then we're all fine again. I'll try. Oh, that's worse. Oh, that's. I should really correct that. Oh, no.
Digging a little deeper, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there too.
I think that's why I lead a life of self deprecation. Just to avoid that thing. If I accidentally spoke well of myself, I could look like a jackass. Anyway, let's be done, because I don't like this shit anyway.
Okay.
If you'd like to learn more about evil, visit your local library with a coatee on it. Don't worry, next week the other guys will be back. Because we refuse.
We refuse.
And, now we're going to go tour the acid mines.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.